Hello, everyone. Welcome to another J-Talk Extra Time. My name is Stuart Smith, and the next voice you're going to hear is John Steele. John, how are you doing?
Hi, Stuart. Very well, thanks. I think the listeners will be glad to have us talking to each other instead of just me after a couple of solo pods last week. So thanks for saving the bacon.
No worries. And I'm back behind the anonymity of a purely audio version after making my debut on the big screen with Big Ben Maxwell last week. John, it's been a pretty kind of eventful couple of days in J2 with regards to transfers. So we're going to come on to, this podcast is going to be a kind of an overview of where we are in the season so far, because we've come to the end of like five consecutive games. So like Saturday, Wednesday, etc. So we thought we'd take a little bit of a breather and look at where we are in the league and kind of what teams are impressing us, what teams aren't impressing us, and that kind of thing. But as I was just about to mention, there's been a couple of big transfers in the past couple of days or so in J2. A couple of days ago, Chong Tae-se signed for Albrecht Niigata on loan for the rest of the season. I think he's 36 years old now, but he hasn't played a lot recently. But he's, as we'll come on to, he's a bit of a beast in J2. But today, John, we had a bit of a bombshell move in your neck of the woods with Yokohama, well, now ex-Yokohama FC striker Iba moving to Omiya Ardija on a full transfer, not a loan deal. And Takuya Takagi seems to have corralled his man, and because Omiya needed something, right? They've been in horrendous form over the past kind of week and a half or so. So, John, first of all, obviously, like, were you surprised at Iba's signing for Omiya? And probably more importantly, what can Iba bring to Omiya and to their promotion hopes?
Yeah, good questions. I think firstly, it's kind of surprising to see Iba leaving Yokohama, because I know he's very happy. He's been very happy there. I mean, he stayed for four seasons. I don't know what the average is for a foreign player in the J League, but I think once you get past four seasons, what one or two seasons is the norm, isn't it? I think it's fair to say. I am not surprised to see him staying in the sort of greater Kanto area, because he has a wife and four kids, and I think they're all in school, so I assume he's not going to be moving house. It'd be a pretty short drive or commute to get to Omiya for training, etc. So I guess he wanted to stay. I think I'd be a lot more surprised if he'd moved, to a different island, a different one of the main islands, for example. And I think it's fair to say he's had hardly any playing time this year. I think maybe one cameo off the bench in the Levan Cup, accursed fixture nightmare competition.
Are you surprised at that? Are you surprised that he hasn't really been given a chance in J1? Because like, he was so important for Yokohama for the last 4 years. He's got a phenomenal scoring record. I think it's like one every other game. And with their promotion, I would have assumed, and I know they brought in Ichimi from Gamba online. I know they've got Yusuke Minagawa, but I would have thought he would have relished the chance to start in J1, but it just hasn't been that way for whatever reason. I'm surprised. What about you?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that have kind of gone against him this year. First of all, I think he wasn't in the team at the very start of the season, because Ichimi came in and was kind of the starter, first of all. And then he got he had an injury and wasn't training for a while, and I think that coincided with the kind of the COVID-19 break, which was a reset. I think he had an injury that meant he couldn't couldn't train for us. So I was happy to see that Almir today posted on Twitter some pictures of him, you know, training. So I think he is fit and available, because that was always the question mark. You know, we don't always get good injury info in Japan. Clubs like to keep these things under wraps. So I know he has been injured and then not been able to get a place in the team. But I think, yeah, the fact that he's moved, probably we can conclude, I think he perhaps had a conversation with the manager, Shima Taira at Yokohama, and realised that his playing time was going to be limited even when fit. I think another thing that hasn't helped him, which is kind of paradoxical, is Yokohama have actually done pretty well, haven't they, and held their own in J1 since they've come back. I think they're pretty much in mid-table, maybe 11th. So you'd imagine that Iba would be being turned to more if they were struggling, maybe if they were down at the bottom. I think a more bigger surprise is he's gone somewhere in J2 rather than a J1 team. I mean, if he's available, you know, perhaps another J1 team, even a team closer to the bottom, might have taken a chance on him. Another thing that crossed my mind is maybe Yokohama FC want another foreign player or another striker. So perhaps they're kind of making space, making space for another player to be brought in. But I think Iba, you know, we talked about Chongteze being 36. Iba's not quite there yet, but he is at the age where I think he needs to play. So I think if he's not getting game time at Yokohama FC, then it's better if he moves. If we come on to what it means for Almir, I think this has the potential to be a huge acquisition. As you mentioned, his goals per game record in J2 is pretty outstanding, and he's basically, not to beat around the bush, he's a match winner, he's a difference maker at that level, whether he gets the service or not. And I think with players like Shinozuka, we often talk about, I think he definitely will, but he, you know, he can score free kicks, he can score from outside the box, left foot, right foot, header, you know, it's no problem. So yeah, it's very interesting. I think we could also maybe infer that this is a kind of tacit admission that after letting Juanma go to Fukuoka in the winter transfer window, they didn't really have that kind of target man option, and perhaps this is a kind of admission that was maybe a mistake, and they were perhaps left a little bit short in that department. So yeah, it's going to be absolutely fascinating to see how it you know, how that shakes down. But we know he's a good player. He can score goals. I expect him to play quite a lot. And I believe Omiya go to Nagasaki, don't they, at the weekend, the leader. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure he'll be at least on the bench. And he might even get thrown in from start. Because another point you made that's very, very salient, Omiya struggling a little bit right now. Yeah, I don't think they've won for those 3 straight defeats, isn't it? And no wins in the last 5. So the perfect time to shake things up, I think.
Yeah, they were undone with a 97th minute penalty at the weekend away at Ehime to cap a truly
from their ex player as well.
Exactly. Yeah, to cap a truly shitty week for Almir. But this has obviously lifted their spirits ahead of that kind of suddenly kind of. It is an imposing trip to Nagasaki, but it's one that if you stick Iba even just on the bench, even if like he doesn't know the players he's playing with, but if it's 20 minutes to go or 25 minutes to go and saying, look, Iba, just get on and do your thing, that's something that other teams would have to worry about, I would think. I think slightly, I don't expect Chongteise to have that kind of impact at Albirex Niigata, but then I'm not sure that he needs to. I mean, they've already, obviously, I think Fabio is still out injured, but they've still got Arata kind of Watanabe, they've got Shion Homma, I don't know for how long he'll stay there, Romero Frank as well is chipping in with goals left, right and centre. And I think that I read and like we said before we started recording, I read somewhere, it might have been the Albirex Niigata official site, that they value his presence as much as anything. He's a ferocious and hardened competitor. He absolutely balled out last time he was in J2 with Shimizu S-Pulse. I think he scored like 26 or 27 goals. He hasn't been in the S-Pulse team recently. I think they're somewhat understandably focused on youth. Peter Klimovsky is doing a fine job bringing the youth players through, but this is a big signing for Niigata. And I'm not sure where I saw this, but I saw this on Twitter. I can't remember the account name, but it was like something like, last year we said goodbye to Olunga in J2, but now we've got Peter Utaka, Chonte Sei, and Iba's back. And it's like, oh yeah, there are some big name yeah, strikers
party,
back
party
in
party like it's 2017.
Exactly, yeah. But these are definitely interesting times for those two orange teams. Let's move on to our overview of the league, really, John. So we're not going to focus on the results of the games this week. Obviously, we'll mention them in passing, but we're going to take a look just at the clusters in the table. And the first cluster we're going to look at, John, is the top three. So we've got Vivar and Nagasaki, who are top of the league. They won at the weekend. They beat, I'm trying to rack my brain, who did they beat? They beat Mito Hollyhock, that's right, away from home. They won 3-2. Giravans Kitakyushu beat Tokyo Verdy. They're in second place. And Tokushima Vortis needed an injury time winner to win at Jeff United. John, obviously Nagasaki are top. But these three teams as a group, are they the best three teams in the league right now?
Yeah, I think the league table sometimes lies after three or four games, maybe even as many as eight or nine games. But I think by the time we get to 14 games, as you said, it's a third of the way through the season. Yeah, I think Nagasaki and Tokushima, I think we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording. I thought they would be sort of top eight or top six material. So I think Nagasaki have done better. They've surpassed my expectations. Tokushima played really good football, but not to kind of, it's not trying to give them a kind of backhanded compliment. That's kind of what we expect from them. So I think Kitakyushu are the team where I'm not confident yet saying they're one of the best teams, but they're just on such a hot streak that they could stay up there for the rest of the season. I think they certainly got some of the most exciting young players, I think, or unknown players maybe to me in the case of players like Disaro. So I think Tokushima are definitely one of the best teams. I think Nagasaki are a top six team who've played really well and been managed very well so far. And Kitakyushu, I want us to check in again after 28 games, after two-thirds of the season, because I know there's a good team in there. You don't get to win, is it eight games in a row? You don't win eight games in a row. You're not a good team. But, I'm just not sure yet. I don't know, because they've just been on such a hot streak that they're almost, they're definitely more than the sum of their parts at the moment. I don't know, what do you think about Kitakyushu especially?
Yeah, well, I think the theme that runs through these top three teams is that they're all managed well. And it's something that we should have expected from Ricardo Rodriguez at Tokushima. And also we should have expected it at Giravans Kitakyushu. Shinji Kobayashi is, I don't know, if he wasn't bald and he looked a bit cooler, he might be considered one of the best managers in Japan, because he does nothing but get teams promoted and make them good teams. And I think that we should have expected him to kind of get Giravants decent. I mean, this is beyond anybody's kind of wildest expectations, but manager wise they've got a good one there. The surprise for me is Teguro Mori at Nagasaki. I didn't think he was that kind of manager. I didn't think he had it in him to get this Nagasaki team to the top, but he's done it in it's interesting, and in that he's done it a very different way from like Kobayashi has done at Giravans Kitakyushu. And it's something that our friend Gogo Omiya Adija chimed in on asking about like squad rotation. Now, Kitakyushu have a very kind of stable squad of players. Like, there are changes, but there's not wholesale changes on a weekly basis. Nagasaki kind of chop and change, especially their front attacking unit. They chop and change it quite often. And Omiya Adija, I mean, I think one of the things that struck me about them is just they make changes. They make like 6 or 7 changes per game. And I know there's a question to be asked about kind of the balance between kind of preserving players' energy throughout the season and the balance with that and what do you call it? Getting a settled team and getting an understanding between players. And I think that Nagasaki and Kitakyushu have done it quite differently. So, but they've both been successful in doing it. And so I think that would say to me that there isn't kind of a one-size-fits-all philosophy for this one. But teams like Omiya, Jeff, trying to look at the other teams near the bottom of the table, Matsumoto, Yamaga, like they've chopped and changed and it hasn't worked for them. And so yeah, it's I wonder where the line is that separates kind of good teams that are kind of averagely coached and good teams that are well coached, because I'm not convinced that Nagasaki are better than like Kyoto, for instance, but they're being coached better. And that's the obvious difference between the sides. And that's why Nagasaki are top and a team like Kyoto are down in seventh. So I think it's very easy for us to say that Giran's Kitakyushu are the surprise of the season. They've got, and no one expected them to be up in second position, but the coaching has been the difference, really. And I think we can say that without question for the top three teams, that they're the beacons of good coaching. Obviously, there are different examples as you go down, like Tochigi are doing well, Machida Zelvia are okay, yeah, but the top three teams are the ones that are doing well, I think.
I think the point about squad rotation is really well made, and I think you should always, as the coach, you have to think about why you're making the changes. You know, is it because the players are tired, in which case it might be something you could address on the training ground with, you know, lighter sessions, for example, things like that. Are you making the changes because you want to do something different tactically, or are you making the changes just because it's, you know, fashionable and you've seen other managers doing it on the telly? And I think there are these are all influences that managers have to think carefully about. And I think tied into that is the fact that I think when Nagasaki do their rotation and change players, I'm always looking at the lineup to see where they look weaker, and it's hard to find. It's hard to pinpoint that. For example, last couple of games, Junki Hata started up front, and I immediately thought, well, that's not as scary a proposition as facing Keiji Tamada, Victory Barbo. But then, you know, I think he scored, maybe scored one or set one up or both, I think, in the game in the game at the weekend.
Yeah, he did.
You know, I was wrong about that, and I think whereas for some of the other teams, when Omiya rotate, for example, when Jeff rotate, the squad looks weaker as a result, I think. Or sorry, the starting lineup looks weaker. What Nagasaki? I mean, Nagasaki have even rotated the goalkeepers, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. Yeah.
Maybe it's my old school kind of, I think the era that I grew up watching football in the UK was like you had a first choice goalkeeper and a second choice, and if the second choice goalkeeper was playing, you got lots of crosses in early. left your elbow in there to see if they were up for it or not. Whereas Nagasaki haven't had to worry about it. I mean, I'm not really sure. I guess Tokushige is the number one. He's played the most games. Is that right?
I think so. But, yeah, I think that's right.
Who's the other Taka? Is it Takagiwa?
Takagiwa. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen both of them making good saves and looking good. So I think it'd be very hard for me I mean, I'm a casual Nagasaki watcher, and I'm not really sure what their strongest 11 is, but I reckon there's probably fans who've watched every minute of every game over the first 14 who are perhaps not sure if, you know, Tokushige is a better keeper than Takagiwa, or who the best strikers are. And I think that is also good management, because if we're guessing about that, then I'm sure the opposition are guessing about it as well. On Kyushu, I noticed that for the game against Ferdy, they didn't have Kokubu.
No, they didn't. He's injured. Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of, again, immediately was laser focused on, well, that weakens them. And, you know, it'll be a harder game for them as a result. And they did go behind with an own goal, but they came back and then they showed the confidence that they've gained on this run and the character the team has. And it wasn't a problem. Whether it will be a problem in other games, missing a player who's been very influential, you know, we'll wait to see. But, yeah, if you can overcome, I think Giravans have a smaller squad. Probably. Well, they definitely have a smaller squad than Nagasaki, and yeah, that's when the injuries can be a problem. But they I wouldn't say they got away with it without Kokubu against Verdi. That's not fair, but they overcame it. You know, it'll be difficult to do that over the next 28 games if the injuries mount up, I think. And Tokushima, another team, have a really good squad, I think.
I think so too. Like, before we move on to the clubs that are chasing the top three, what do you think about Verdi? Like, sometimes they look beautiful. Like, they play some gorgeous, like, one touch football around the edge of the area. But sometimes they just look weak. Like, is it as simple as, like, when they're on song, they're difficult, but they're difficult to play against, but they're not at the races all the time, because they currently sit in eighth place, which is, considering that I was slagging them off, I've slagged them off a few times this year, but like earlier on in the season, they looked kind of listless and devoid of ideas. I think as a casual watcher of them, I think Yuhei Sato has been, every time I've watched them, he's involved in everything good that they do and some of the bad things
and
as
some
well.
Bad.
But he looks like he's the fulcrum of the team, and he looks like whenever he's involved, good things tend to happen. So are Verdi a team that kind of go with the whims of Yuhei Sato, or is there more to them than that?
Yeah, it's kind of easy to talk about the positive side of things, isn't it, at the moment, because they're a bit higher up in the table than we were last time we had this kind of pod. And I know they lost against Kitakyushu at the weekend, but it was three straight wins for them before that game. I think Hideki Nagai has proven himself to be a slightly more imaginative coach than it seemed when he came in. You know, the kind of halfway through last season, I think. And the expectation is kind of off Verdi a little bit this year. You know, I don't think anybody's expecting anything other than maybe mid-table, you know, maybe 8th, maybe 16th, somewhere around there. I think we have to reserve judgment a little bit until we've had a chance to see their plan B tactics. So I think one thing that you often notice when you look at their stats is that's kind of Takeshi Oki, you know, 1,000 passes, but you know, it's 300 passes per one shot, and then the shot was from outside the box kind of thing. I think the idea is to have a plan A, which is the strikerless formation, if you like. So somebody like Harry Ide will play up front. You know, or I think there's other players have been up there. I think even Shion Inoue has, you know, played as the striker a few times. Now, when that happens, yeah, when it works and it clicks, it looks good. Like, I mean, the game against Matsumoto recently, Wednesday night home game, Shion Inoue, he wasn't playing as a striker, but it was the kind of strikerless formation. And once he got bored, he decided to just start pinging it around. Matsumoto's back four or back eight couldn't deal with it. But I think the plan B is to have a focal point like target man, Yoshito Okubo or Leandro, you know, and have the option to kind of go long for that kind of player. And yeah, since the start of the season, Okubo and Leandro have both been injured, not been involved. And I think Okubo's just coming back now. I know he came off the bench for a bit in games, and he was on the bench. I'm not sure if he made it on in the game at Kito Kyushu. So I think it will be interesting to see if there's a game where they start with no striker, if you like, and then they can bring somebody on, like Okubo, for the last 20 or 25 minutes and kind of have a go at a team, or alternatively do the opposite and kind of have maybe a target man, or even Okubo and Leandro together for the first half, you know, and then take them out and bring on sort of quicker, you know, ball-playing midfielders, if you like, to kind of stretch the team out on. So, yeah, it's hard to give a definitive answer because I think we've only seen half of the puzzle. But, yeah, I didn't really expect much this season, I have to be honest. So I think to see them in eighth is good. But I agree that when they look good and score goals, they're very impressive. But sometimes they have a lot of possession, which is just kind of, it's tiki-taka, but no real bite, no real incisive play. I will make a quick mention for the goalkeeper, Mateus, that the Brazilian who's come in, and he makes the odd mistake, but he's very young. And I don't think he's played much club football, even in Brazil. This is his first kind of run of games anywhere. So I'm sure communication, has been a problem. But I think he is actually, even though he spills more shots than he probably should, he seems to have made things a bit more stable at the back. So, it's interesting to see how they're going, but I don't see them... They're very nice to watch, certainly, you know, as they come over the halfway line. But, yeah, I don't think there's enough... we talked about strength and depth a few minutes ago, didn't we? I don't think there's enough strength and depth for them to be any higher than maybe eighth where they are now. But it'd be interesting to see what they look like if, you know, there's a game with the 4-4-2 and Okubo and Leandro up front, for sure.
Interesting. Yeah, I like that analysis. It's good, good. The best of the rest. So between Tokushima Vortis in third and Jubilo Iwata in fourth, there's a 5-point gap. Jubilo Iwata thumped Zweigen Kanazawa, I think it was 6-0 at the weekend, to move up into fourth. Other teams in and around that area include Albirex Niigata. They were 1-0 winners against FC Ryukyu at the weekend. Kyoto Sanga drew 2-2 at home to Matsumoto Yamaga. Vanfori Corfu lost at a suddenly kind of upwardly mobile Montedio Yamagata, who seemed to have turned a bit of a corner. Obviously, we've spoken about Omiya and Jeff already. Like, of those group of teams, like, which one or two do you think might kind of start to kick through the gears and start to put pressure on those top three teams?
It's difficult because they're kind of, as you mentioned, they're all bunched together at the moment. I still think I'm kind of stealing from you a little bit from the green room before the pod, Stu, but Kyoto have got more than what they've shown, I think, so far. You can't bet against a team that has Pete Uthaka in it. I think he's scored 11 goals, hasn't he, now, from 14 matches. It's pretty impressive stuff. So I think Kyoto have got more. I think there's more to come from Kyoto if they can just tighten up a little bit at the back. I know they play the system with three defenders, and they've had Moriwaki out injured, haven't they, for a while. I'm not sure that him coming back is going to automatically shore things up, but I think if they could just tighten up at the back a little bit, maybe not let in a 55-yard free kick from Serginho like they did at the weekend. Pretty incredible goal, but as a goalkeeper you've got to be disappointed, I think. But yeah, really cracking free kick. I also think Kofu are another team that you just can't really bet against, because even though they kind of look a bit boring on paper in defence and midfield especially, I think that the not much creativity in that midfield for me. But then the front three is going to be players like Izumizawa, Dudu, your mate Junior Barros as well, who has been in good form until he got injured. So yeah, you can't bet against Corfu, you know, suddenly making anyone. I also think, I know you're cold on them, and I accept that, but Iwata, again, defensively, another team that tends to play with, all these teams play with three at the back now, don't they? Corfu, Kyoto, Iwata, I think they've all got three defenders most of the time. there's just so many players who can score goals in that Iwata team, as was proven, albeit against a very tired looking Kanazawa. I think it wasn't really a fair assessment. They didn't really give a fair, didn't really put in their best performance at the weekend. But I think Iwata could just, if they do click, and you've got, Koki Ogawa scoring goals, you have Lukian scoring goals, there's players that come off the bench and score, like, say, a Nakano and like a Lulinha, who I think scored his first two goals of the weekend. It's going to give him confidence. I don't know. I just feel like I'll accept that Iwata are not the best team in the league, but they could go on a run, I think. I don't know. What say you?
It's not that I'm cold on Jubilo. I think, but like you said, they took advantage of a Kanazawa team that looked knackered, and they were suffering from key injuries. And I think it's not a representative scoreline of what both of those teams are, because I don't think Jubilo are that good, and Swegen are definitely not that bad. But like you said, like you scroll through who they can call on, and I'll just end up repeating what you said, really. Koki Ogawa, Lulinha, Lukian, Seiya Nakano, Yamada Hiroki, Omori as well. When you list them like that, it's kind of, oh, okay, they do have some really good attacking options. Like I said, if they click, but I don't know that they will. I think that's the thing. I'm still a bit unsure of this coach, Jubero. I'm not sure, because just to go back, like we were speaking about coaching, right? And so far, like, Jubilo have blown very hot and very cold. There are signs they're getting it together, but I need a little bit more. I need a little bit more kind of evidence. I want to see them kind of gritty wins. I want to see it's all right beating a knackered team 6-0, but I want to see them go and really kind of like go to Nagasaki or go to Tokushima and those kind of places and get results, because
I think just before I forget, and I'll mention any tactical system that can make Koki Ogawa look lost and have him not score for like five or six games in a row, that's he was an absolute beast, wasn't he, for Mito last year. The idea that he could be out of form for that long is it must be down to the tactics. I think something wasn't right at that point.
Like I said, it's they need to show me a bit more. Like you said with Kyoto, they need to plug those gaps at the back. And we've mentioned Omiya and Tokyo Verde, and so. John, let's move on, and we'll tackle our final J2 topic before we move on to J3. Who's disappointed you this year? Obviously, there's no... I think the league has suffered a little bit, not a little bit, okay, a lot actually, with the fact that there's no relegation, so there's no... it's the best way to phrase it. There's no nervous energy at the bottom. I think that's impacting a lot of ways that teams play. Obviously, like when you look at the bottom of the table, like Renault for Yamaguchi are there, Gunma are there, Ehime are there, kind of the teams that we thought maybe in and around there. I think the big name is Matsumoto Yamaga, but also Fajiano Okayama are down there as well. And for me, those two teams, Okayama and Matsumoto, like I think we're both on record as saying that we didn't think that Matsumoto would be up to much this year. I don't think I expected them to struggle quite as badly as they are. Okayama, they always do this. I'm glad that they've done it earlier in the season, because usually it's about halfway through the season and we think, this is the year Okayama get it all together. But a team that has like Lee Yong Jae and Satoki Ueijo and Koto Ueda and Shintaro Shimizu, there's no way that they should be languishing down in 16th place. That's just poor from them. Those two are my disappointments so far in J2. Hopefully I've left some crumbs on the table for you to work with. But yeah, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I can't argue with Matsumoto being disappointing. I think they've been very sort of like stodgy and not that much fun to watch. And same with Okayama, a team that I consistently overrate. And I think I'm talking about pod analysis, but also the J-Pred game. I always seem to have them down to not lose, and they keep losing. So it might be my fault. I might have jinxed them. And other disappointing teams, I think... On the one hand, it's early days, and you're right in terms of relegation. You know, no relegation this year, so the bottom of the table is not as thrilling as it has been, I think, in previous years. But I think even at the upper end, if we talk about Omiya, you know, as we're talking tonight, they're in ninth, but only the top two get promoted this year, right? There's no playoffs. Well, they're already 11 points behind now. Add in Iba to the mix, you know, and three game weeks from now until the end of time, and you know, they could knock off 9 points in short order. I accept that, so it's not a foregone conclusion. But as you look down the table, you know, past Omiya, and I think I'd mention maybe Fukuoka so much better than they were last season that it kind of feels a bit mean to call them a disappointment. But I think, as you say, you left me crumbs, so I'll make crumade with them. I think Fukuoka, you know, they're 13th. They were able to end a run of three straight losses, weren't they, with a pretty hard-fought win away at Tochigi at the weekend. Brilliant free kick from Emil Salomonsson, we should mention. Probably my favourite of the weekend to win it. But yeah, I do think Fukuoka, again, there's more to... There should be more juice to be squeezed out of that team. I think Cervantes hasn't been as noticeable this year because he's not been as busy because the players in front of him are doing a lot better. But I'm looking at players like Diatono. Like he is really exciting. He does score goals, but I think he's good enough that he can drag the team a bit more. He could team forward a bit more, I think. Fukuoka is a team I'll put. And disappointment might be a bit harsh, but underwhelmed might be. Might be a bit better. Other disappointments, if I can be sort of ruthlessly specific, it's Jeff's home record. And it's I was looking at this today. So they've lost 5 of the 7 home games so far, including two in the 94th minute against Gunma and against Tokushima at the weekend. Now, I think I've got my put my finger on this. It's that your man there. Tell me the Jun Hwan, isn't it? No, Jun Hwan. Thank you. Yes, I was going to say the Seretse under 23's goalkeeper there for a minute. So, I think during his time at Tosu, he was a very counter-attacking coach, and I think the problem is that the way Jeff are kind of used to playing at home is not they're not the underdog or the small team in that case. And the other team, the away team, is usually playing on the counter-attack. So I think in quite a few home games, both teams have wanted to counter-attack. And Tokushima, probably another good example. You know, if you try and play a counter-attacking game against Tokushima, you are probably going to lose. I know it came down to a header in the last minute. So that you might say that's a Marvich. But 5 home defeats out of 7 is not very good. And I think it's taken him a bit longer than you'd expect to kind of realise that either if you're going to play that counter-attacking game at home, you might need different players. If you're stuck with your players that you've got, and I think that's, he is stuck with those players pretty much, then you need to adapt the system a little bit, adapt the tactics a bit more, because their away record's not bad. So I think that kind of proves my point that they are pretty good when the onus is on the other team to come at them a little bit. And they're not very good, or they're not as good, certainly, when the pressure's on them to kind of create the game, if you like. So, yeah, that's been a disappointment as well for me. Trying to think who else has sort of let me down. let me down badly. But I think you covered it with the other teams. We should mention Tochigi as a positive surprise as well, I think.
Ah, definitely, yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay then, yeah, good stuff, John. Before we hit the predictions, let's have a look at the upcoming weekend's games. And you look at this slate of games, John, there are a lot of pretty decent looking ones.
Non-stop bangers.
Non-stop, completely. Interesting you're just talking about Jeff, actually. They're away at Giravants Kitakyushu. Now, you wonder if that game might suit them. It sounds odd, but if that game might suit them more than like a home game against like Gunma or whatever, just the way they're set up. I think all eyes will be on Nagasaki. They're hosting Omiya Ardija. Will we see Iba? Will we not? Tokushima visit Matsumoto Yamaga. Avispa Fukuoka hosting a possible Chongtaisei. Albrecht's Niigata, Tokyo Verdy versus Kyoto. There's some really good games this weekend, John. What are you looking at, or what are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I think I'm probably about to look very silly, but Kitakyushu are not going to win every game between now and the end of December, are they? They're going to drop points somewhere. It could be against Jeff, I think, over the weekend. Nagasaki Viomi is very hard to look past, though, isn't it? It's kind of the game of the round. I think you're going to see Iba in the squad, possibly even, you know, starting from the off. So that's going to be an interesting game. Matsumoto versus Tokushima, you know, for all the shit that we've given Matsumoto this season, it's not an easy ground to go to and get a result, is it? I don't think. So Tokushima, I don't know, that could be interesting. I think Tokushima, they won against Jeff, it was a tough match and they were pretty tired. So it's kind of two long trips as well, isn't it? In the space of two rounds. Other games looking good. I don't know. I think maybe Kofu against Tochigi could be a good one, because there'll be absolutely no midfield in that game, I wouldn't have thought.
Just defense versus attack. Yeah.
Basically going to be six versus six. Yeah, futsal on a big pitch. And I noticed Dudu's hair has had another transformation. He's got this kind of blonde. Yeah, it's a two block, but the top block is blonde. I think I'm just jealous, to be honest. I don't know why I'm mentioning Dudu's hair. It's a very fine head of hair. How about you, Stu?
Like I said, I think Nagasaki and Omiya. I think Kyoto's trip to Verdy will be, I think that'll be high scoring, actually. I'm not sure who will end up on top in that game, because I think they're pretty evenly matched at the moment, but I think that'll be a pretty high scoring game. I wonder if Yamaguchi might climb off the bottom if they beat Kanazawa as well. So I think, yeah, all over the match day. And yeah, Jubilo go to Gunma. I mean, Gunma have been walked over quite a few times at home. So if Jubilo are anything like they were last week, and then yeah, they could be in the goals again, I would say. But predictions are not my forte. But I know predictions are someone else's forte. John, do you want to give a quick roundup as to what's going on in the predictions league?
Yeah, very much. Yeah, it's not me, I hasten to add, who's good with the predictions. But yeah, as always, if you want to join in our just for fun online prediction, you get in touch with Condre or Okinawa Aussie on Twitter. They can help you out. In J1, there was some pretty depressed scoring in the J1 Pick'em League. Akakichi no 11 moves back into the top position. Beerus 44 is in second. In J2, no real change at the top. Sean Carroll, seems to be fading a little bit, as far as you know. Sven AKG picked up 58 points from the last round, which is a very impressive haul. J3, no real change at the top. For quite a few surprise results, I think, which threw people through a loop in J3. JFL was back with a bang. I haven't really been keeping up with it this season, to be honest. But Frontale Rabbit picked up 38 points over the weekend. He's in top slot there. So yeah, if you want to get in on the action, yeah, please get in touch with Condre, or Joaquin, or Ozzy, and they'll sort you out.
Crikey, Neil Debnam rolling with the high stakes in the JFL. That's an interesting turn of events. Okay, so you mentioned
Frontale are wobbling now, aren't they?
Exactly, so perhaps it's a bit of yin and yang. Yeah.